It's official. The Modern Manager podcast has passed 300 episodes. I am so proud of this milestone, and I could not have gotten here without you. So to celebrate, I hope you'll take the next step with me and join the Modern Manager Skills Accelerator. Get 30% off when you join before May 1st as my gift to you. Use the code CELEBRATE300 and go to themodernmanager.com/skillsaccelerator. Hiring can be one of the most stressful parts of a manager's job. It takes a lot of time, and we really don't want to hire the wrong person. Well, thankfully, today's guest will fill us in on what to do and not to do to make your hiring process run smoothly. I am joined by Vicky Brown. After 2 decades of leadership roles in the corporate world, Vicky founded her own HR consultancy, Idomeneo Enterprises, in 2001. Her Leader's Journey experience is an education program specifically designed to equip entrepreneurs and business professionals with the tools, guidance, and confidence to navigate the sometimes, or always, complex world of HR. In the extended interview available to members of Podcast Plus through our private podcast feed, available wherever you listen to podcasts, Vicky shares her strategy for what to do when you are on the fence about a candidate, along with how to use the reference checks most effectively. And a warm welcome to Roy F. to the Modern Manager community. Now here's my conversation with Vicky. Are you a manager, boss, or team leader who aspires to level up and unleash your team's full potential? You're listening to the Modern Manager podcast, and I'm your host, Mamie Canfer-Stewart. Each week, I explore effective strategies and provide actionable insights that supercharge your management abilities, optimize team performance, and foster a healthy workplace culture. Become a rockstar manager and help your team thrive at themodernmanager.com/more. Thank you so much for joining me today, Vicky. I'm super excited to talk about the topic of hiring because it's something that managers get to do probably, well, maybe more than we would like to sometimes, because at least in my experience, it's very exciting when you get to have a new team member, but it's also so much work and so much stress and so many worries about whether this person is the right person and if they're going to be great or if it's just like, what are we getting ourselves into? So thank you for coming on and solving all of our problems.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'm really thrilled. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm going to try to solve as many problems as I can. Let me get my bag of magic tricks here.
Fabulous. All right. Why don't we begin with why is hiring so hard? It just seems like it shouldn't be that hard to find somebody to fill a role who is going to be a good team member who has the right skill set, but it just seems like it's really, really hard and maybe even getting harder in this day and age.
You're right. The marketplace is very challenging. It's opening up a little bit, but such a little bit that it's hard to even really acknowledge it at this point. But it's a really, really tough market. And I hate to say this because I hate it when people say things like this to me, but the reality is it circles back to the hiring manager. It's all about preparation. Listen, I know that, you know, recruiting and going out and finding people and interviewing, that, you know, the big secret is I'm an HR professional. That's not my favorite discipline, actually. And I'm so lucky. I have a fantastic staffing director who takes care of all that. But the point is that when you are going out to find someone, before you even get to the point of you're looking for X, Y, and Z, you need to know what X, Y, and Z is. What do you need this person to do? And it's not a laundry list of here's the job description. This is every task that you're going to take care of. Yes, you do need to have a job description. I'm an HR person. Of course, I'm going to say you need a job description. But in addition to that, you need to know what are the deal breakers? What are the most important skills or sets of experience that you need? And maybe they don't walk in the door with that, but they have experience that can be transitioned and grown into what you need. But it's really critical to know what you're looking for and not just the, you know, black and white A's and B's of what the list of critical job tasks are. You're really looking for someone who brings something to the party. That's a phrase I like to use because you're looking for someone who adds. can contribute to the whole. And that doesn't mean that you're hiring a bunch of the same person. It means that you're hiring diversity of experiences and backgrounds, because those people will add to the complexity and of perspective. They'll be able to bring something again to the party that other members of the team may not. And that makes the entire team richer and much more effective. So short answer is you have to be really, really diligent and do a lot of pre-work. There are some tricks to the rest of it, finding people and interviewing them. But the first part is the most critical part.
I'm curious about how we can do a better job of writing good and accurate job descriptions or role descriptions. Because I know it's in my experience, I've had times where I've been doing the thing for a long time, and now I need to hire somebody else to do it. And I know exactly what it is, approximately how much time it takes, what success looks like, because I've been there. And then there are times where I'm hiring and I'm like, I feel like I need someone to help me with this thing, because either I'm not doing it very well and so I need someone else to do it, or it's something that I know I should be doing and I've just never had the time to do it, and now is the moment to add that capacity. And in those cases, it's not always clear how to describe what I want or need. So I'm wondering if you have any tips or tricks for how we can do a better job of actually laying out what those responsibilities are without it being too granular into like, here's every single task, and without it being so ambiguous because we're not even totally sure what it looks like.
Exactly. And I would say use the tools at your disposal. If you have team members already, ask them. Definitely ask them. They are doing the work every day and they can provide a level of insight for you, particularly if you're managing the group or if you're the business owner. You may not know what it feels like to actually get in the trenches and do that every single day. They'll be able to add real value. If you don't have the benefit of having team members who are already doing some level of the work, go online. Take a look at other postings. See what other companies have put out there for what they're looking for and what the job responsibilities are. All of that is research. Do as much research as you can, because you'll find that there are things that are part of the job that don't even occur to you because you do it all the time. You know, it's just not top of mind. So use other information that's out there and available, and then you can hone it down and you can customize it for what you need. But don't just stare at the blank piece of paper and feel like you're all alone. There's definitely help out there.
That makes a lot of sense. And like looking at other job descriptions, like so easy and so helpful. And you might even discover things you didn't even know you needed, which can be also a real bonus. So we're working on the job description. We're figuring out what we really need. We're putting down on paper. What's your take on having and identifying competencies or skills or particular experiences? Is that something that we should also be really trying to hone in on? Not just the big responsibilities, but I need someone who's a good problem solver, or I need someone who deals well with ambiguity. Like, are those the kinds of things we should also be thinking about?
Absolutely. And those are what I call the personal success characteristics. And those characteristics, so that's something you don't necessarily want a diversity of success characteristics. All across your team, you want success characteristics like they're diligent, they're detail-minded, they take responsibility and accountability for their work, they're fairly autonomous. Those kinds of things, if that's what your culture is, then you want that in every single person who's working there. If your culture is they always run the problem up the flagpole and, you know, escalate it and ask the person above them, maybe that's your culture. Maybe you want people to check in on everything. You don't want them solving problems on their own or taking that kind of initiative, because you have a much more structured environment. Then it doesn't help you to bring in someone who's kind of a, you know, fly by the seat of their pants, creative problem solver. They're not going to fit. So you have to understand what your culture is. And then definitely hire for the success characteristics of your culture. That does not mean, again, hiring people who all have the same perspective or people who all have the same skill set, but those particular culture characteristics, you're looking for that. Once you have determined what those are, and again, look at the folks who are already on your team. If you don't have a team, look at the kinds of things that you feel have made you. For instance, if you're a first-time entrepreneur or first-time business owner and you're just hiring your first person, Take a look at the things that made you successful in your prior jobs. Take a look at the characteristics that you think are important as you go through your day. Those are the kinds of things that you first start taking a look at. And again, check out what other people have to say too.
Always, always check out what other people have to say.
Always check out.
You know, I love hiring for competencies or these success skills that you're describing. And I have my own way of interviewing for those, but I'm curious what your way of interviewing is. How do we ask good questions that help us figure out, does the person have this capability? Is this the way that they kind of naturally like to work? Or even if it's not natural, they're comfortable working in this way that we can kind of read the tea leaves and, you know, and know that this person is have a high likelihood of fitting in well and being successful in the role.
Well, I mentioned earlier that I have a spectacular staffing director, and she actually taught me this, so I will give her all the credit. But once you identify what those success characteristics are that you're looking for, take a look at the resume. By the way, you have to prepare. You have to prepare to post the job, but you also have to prepare before you have the interview. I am notorious for being too busy and doing too many things. So I have an interview coming up. Great. I'll glance at the resume about 10 minutes before they get there. You know, that is not preparation. You really have to look through the resume, find the things that speak to the success characteristics and or the experience that you're looking for, and know what kinds of questions you're going to kind of delve into to get information about that. But more importantly, look for things that aren't on the resume. Look for things that you feel are important that aren't reflected in the resume. That interview is a critical opportunity for you to get additional information around that. So when you're talking to someone, let's say you've identified they've been a customer service representative in the past, and you want someone who has a high ability to serve the customer and to problem solve. Ask them about situations where they've problem solved, but don't just ask them the situation. Have them tell you the story and do the thing where the question behind the question. Just keep delving into that story. Ask them more and more and more questions about it, so that you get the full information. The other benefit of that, and I know people get concerned because they feel like perhaps someone might be embellishing the story or maybe embellishing their experience as they come into the interview. The more questions you ask, the more you delve, you'll be able to tell. You'll really be able to tell. You just have to keep going. Don't ask surface questions and don't just leave it there. And for heaven's sakes, please don't ask what kind of tree do you think you are. Those kinds of things aren't particularly helpful. You really are here to get at why they will make a good, why they'll be a good fit for your organization, what they can bring to your company, and conversely for them, because I always say staffing is a marketing role. You are marketing the company to them. So how can the company benefit their career and their development? So it's a give and take. And again, don't be like the way I used to be, which was I'm great at selling the company. Of course I am. I'm the founder. I'm the chief salesperson. So I would peruse the resume for a couple of minutes, ask a few questions about background, and then spend the next 45 minutes talking about how great the company was. That is not an effective interview.
All right. I have so many follow-ups, but I want to start with, do you have a story of either your own experience hiring or of a client you've worked with who has used this technique and just uncovered something really interesting and incredible and like made a really great hire because they followed this kind of process of asking questions and questions and really digging underneath the surface?
Many, many years ago, a client was talking to me about using, you know, this kind of process in interviewing. And ultimately what she found out, this individual was interviewing for one job. I think it was a customer service job. She found out through this process that they had extensive marketing experience, like really extensive marketing experience. And she had been toying with the idea of, what do I do about my marketing? Maybe I'm going to outsource it. I don't know. I'll think about it in 6 months, you know, that kind of thing. She ended up hiring the person and opening a whole marketing division, which was fantastic. That was not what she was thinking of doing. That was not the direction she was going. That was not what the person was interviewing for. But in asking those questions and really digging deep on their background and their experience, and it didn't necessarily show up on the resume, it was just a one-liner, you know, she found that there was this well of experience, and it worked out really, really well for them.
That's amazing. I hope we all get to have that kind of moment in an interview where we like discover something really incredible about someone's background and context and experience that can be so valuable. Let's go back to this. Don't ask people what kind of tree they are. Are there other questions that we should avoid asking, both from the like, these things are legally prohibited, mm-hmm. to the, these just aren't actually that helpful kinds of questions?
Right.
Hey there, Mamie here. Just a quick and exciting update for all of you who are enjoying the Modern Manager podcast. The Modern Manager membership community is getting a minor makeover, and it is now called the Podcast Plus membership. And you can sign up for it and join a community of managers determined to do better every day. You'll get full access to our Slack channel, sketch notes with key takeaways from each episode, all types of guest bonuses, and the members-only podcast, which is ad-free and has extended interviews. So you get to hear the answers to my juiciest questions without interruptions like this one. Sign up today for $15 per month at themodernmanager.com/more. I can't wait to see you there.
So in the vein of not particularly helpful, you know, where do you want to be 5 years from now? Back in the day, and I'm going to age myself now, but back in the dark ages, you know, it was very possible that careers with one company were 10 years, 15 years, that kind of thing. That is not the world that we're in today. So asking someone where they want to be in 5 years doesn't necessarily get you at any valuable information. Everyone wants to advance in their career. Everyone wants to be developed for their career. So if they're going for an administrative assistant job and they say, oh, ultimately I want to be a vice president of communications, well, that's great. Everyone wants to grow in their career. And does that provide any valuable information for you as you're bringing them in as an admin assistant? Not really, because all you know is that they're going to want to grow. Everybody wants to grow. Almost everybody wants to grow. And 5 years is too long of a time span. It's 5 years out. People don't really think 5 years out. If you're lucky, they think 3 years out or a year out. So that's not really valuable information that you need. So I don't love that question. Along the list of, you know, the list of illegal questions is very, very long. The easiest way I can put it is if it doesn't have anything to do with the job, you should not ask the question. You shouldn't ask me whether or not I am married. You shouldn't ask me whether or not I'm planning on having children or have children. You shouldn't ask me what religion I am. All of those things are irrelevant to me doing the job. You just want me to do a good job. I'm in California, so we have a special little set of things that are kind of, you know, off the table. One, actually, that I think most people don't think about is, do you have a car? I still hear that question. Do you have a car? It's not, as an employer, it's not my place to ask you how you're going to perform the job. I need you to be at X, Y, and Z place at such and such a time on such and such a day every week. That's your accountability. If you can't do that, then that's a problem. I can ask you, are you going to be able to do that? But whether you are Ubering or taking public transportation or you have a really great roommate who drives you everywhere or whatever the case may be, that's not something that is my business, really. So those kinds of things, you know, have you ever been involved in a workers' comp case? Those kinds of things aren't really specific or germane to effectively doing the job. So if it doesn't have anything to do with the job, don't ask the question.
That is a super helpful, like, shorthand for things to avoid. I appreciate that. Very easy to remember. I'm wondering about questions like, what did you love about your last job? Or what are you looking forward to in your next job? Or those kinds of questions that are like, maybe related to the job, but maybe like a little outside the box. You know, what do you think about questions like that? Or are there other questions like that that could be helpful or ultimately not helpful in a conversation?
You pick two great questions. I actually like those questions. I like, what did you like about your last job? Or describe the characteristics of your favorite boss or your best manager, that kind of thing. Now, yes, people can give you pat answers. Oh, they, you know, they were really communicative and they really gave me an opportunity to grow. Well, this is the opportunity to dig in on that. Really? Tell me a time when they gave you an opportunity to grow. Tell me about that situation. How did it happen? How long ago was it? What was the outcome? Did you like the outcome? What would you have changed about the outcome? So that's the way you dig in. But I do like those kinds of questions because you get a sense of what's important to them. And that's going to be important if you're bringing them on your team, because not only do you want them to understand you and your organization and what you need, you want to have some level of understanding of who they are and how they kind of, you know, how their brain works and what they need as well. So those, I think those are great questions.
What about asking the same questions to each candidate or different questions to each candidate?
Well, if you're really going to do your homework and dig in on the resumes, you're asking questions that are specific to their experience and their background. So there will be some variety to the questions, but the style of questions, I think, should be consistent. Otherwise, you're trying to compare apples and oranges. And that is just, that makes things way too difficult. And understand that when you're interviewing, you know, there are two approaches to interviewing. You can either start with 0 points or start with 100 points. So someone can walk in the door and you can say, okay, they start with 100 points and let me see how they start losing points as I talk to them. Or they can walk in the door and you can say, okay, you have 0 points. Prove yourself to me. I want you to start telling me things that make me mentally start giving you points. Everybody has their own way of approaching that. I personally like to start with 100, you know, giving you the benefit of the doubt. But also understand that we are all subject to the horns and halo effect. And it's that first impression. Someone walks in, the very first time you shake their hand or fist bump or whatever it is you're doing, or they say hello, you are evaluating all of that. And the more they're like you, the more you have a tendency to feel like, oh, this is a great person. This person's going to be fantastic and blah, blah, blah. And then they kind of have to disprove that theory throughout the interview. If they come in and maybe they're really nervous or maybe they're kind of shy and they don't have a firm handshake or they don't speak up or whatever the case may be, you may end up having a more negative impression of who they are. They might be a fantastic addition to your team. So it's really important for us as interviewers not to let the horns or the halo effect take hold. Try to remain as neutral as possible. Because Kate, actually, who is my staffing director, she tells me all the time, she spent many years beating this into my head. Don't make the offer in the room. Vicky, don't make the offer in the room. Do not make the offer in the room. I will do that. And the times that I have done that, it has not been a positive outcome. Some of them have been very much not positive outcomes. So you really need to do what you're there to do, which is find out more information about them, let them find out more information about you and the organization, and then let them go and percolate on it a little bit. You need to think back and think about all of the candidates and maybe have a conversation with another person. Or maybe if you're going to have a multi-interview process, have them go through that next interview and then, you know, circle back around with the second interviewer. So you really need to give yourself time. I can get really excited and hire someone right on the spot. That is rarely a good move.
I can see how that could go very badly. I'm just thinking back to some of the conversations that I've had in my own experience. We always do multi-round interviews and with multiple people. And I remember walking into one caucus that when we were gathering after we'd all interviewed, and I was like, this person is the best. They're like, we should totally hire them. And this other person, like, absolutely not. They are going to flounder. And the rest of the team felt exact opposite to how I felt. And I was completely overruled, and we ended up moving forward with the candidate that I thought was just going to be a disaster. And it turned out, after another couple rounds of interviews, we hired them, and they've been with us for months now and doing fantastically well. But my first instincts were totally off, and I'm still trying to figure out why. What did I get so wrong? But well, alas, I'm glad I didn't make any offers in the room.
Absolutely. And you also have to give yourself a little bit of grace, because you know what? We all have off days. We might have a day that we're just not taking in the information the way we normally do. So that's a great reason for backup.
So let's talk about this multi-step or multi-person interview. You know, do you have a rule of thumb around how many interviews someone should have before we hire them, how many people should be part of the interviews, should they be one-on-one interviews, should we be doing group interviews, should we be using other types of assessments or simulations to help us gather more data? Like, what do you recommend?
Personally, I don't like group interviewing. And the reason I don't is because there is something unique about a one-on-one experience with someone, particularly around the communication part of interviewing. Also, it's so easy for the interviewing panel to get into a form of groupthink. And I really want, if I'm going to have feedback from other interviewers, I really want kind of their own individual assessment. So that's one thing. Also, it's terrifying to walk into a room and have four people sitting, you know, you feel like you're auditioning. You have four people sitting on the other side of the table and they're all peppering you with questions. So I don't love that. Also, I want the interviewing process to be as relaxed and comfortable for the person who's interviewing as possible. That's how I'm going to get at real and valuable information. I don't want to freak them out. I don't want them to be so nervous that they can't communicate. I want them to show their best self because I want to know who they are and again, what they can bring to the party. So I'm not a fan of group interviews. I don't love having more than three people interview someone. That's a lot of interviews. And I want to show candidates that we are respectful of them as, valuable human beings and that we respect their time and respect their attention. So I don't want to put them through, you went through these three interviews and we only have two more. It's like, I just don't want to do that. Also, it makes the organization look like they don't know what they want to do. They don't know what kind of decision they want to make. Why am I still interviewing with people? Why don't you have a process that gets at all the information you need after I've spoken to three different people in your organization? You know, in my company, the maximum kind of we do is two, to tell you the truth. So if it is someone that's coming on for, like client relations or something like that, I'll have my director of client relations, she'll go ahead and interview them. And then when she finds someone that, she thinks she wants to float up to me, then I'll do a cursory interview with them. But that's kind of the maximum we're going to do. I certainly know why on certain occasions there might be three interviews, but again, don't love more than that. So that would be my feedback.
That makes a lot of sense. And even as being the person on the other side of the table who's doing the interviews, when you're interviewing multiple candidates, that's a lot of hours for you and your team to be devoting to an interview process. If you're having four, five, six people in that interview. So that's a lot. It's a lot for the candidate.
It's a lot.
And it's a lot for our team members.
That speaks to being rigorous around scanning and paring down the resumes. And that's something that I think we also fall into. Resumes that, we're looking at the resumes, we find a few that we think are good, and then a few more, and then a few more, and then a few more. If you're interviewing 25 people, 30, that's a tremendous amount of time out of your organization. So, be ruthless when you are screening those resumes.
Well, on that point, is there something in particular we should be looking for or something we should be paying attention to avoid letting our biases get in the way? Because I know this is like, when you're scanning through and it's really easy to just be like, what college did they go to? And that's actually not very helpful, right? Or what was their last job title? And like, that's not always helpful. So how can we be rigorous and ruthless about not just letting anyone into our process, knowing how much time it takes and how we want to be respectful of candidates and ourselves, and also not throw out all these great candidates because we didn't see something on their resume because we were looking for the wrong things.
Right. And the truth of the matter is you might miss someone. You might miss someone who's great because their resume just doesn't speak to you. And there's not really much you can do about that unless you have someone who does phone screening and they're going to do phone screening before, the interview even happens, which is another way to go. If you are lucky enough to have that contributor in your organization and someone can go through and do phone screening of resumes you're not quite sure about, then that would be terrific. Most of us don't have that luxury. If you don't have that luxury, you might miss a couple people here or there. But I like to look at the middle of the resume. I don't like to look at the top where folks are saying, I don't like to look at the top where they're saying my objective is or these are my big accomplishments. I don't like to look at the bottom where they're talking about what their certifications are, what school they went to, all of that. I like to look in the middle. I like to just look at job experience and see if there's anything there that speaks to me that says, wow, this person might be really great at this job. But you have to take your time when you're looking at these because you might see something that doesn't look like it's directly related, but the characteristics align with what you're looking for. Screening resumes is a difficult job because you get so many resumes. So, you know, it's challenging, but you really, I like to look at the middle first and then I look at the top. And mostly the reason I look at the top is because I want to see, I'm huge on writing. So I want to see what their writing skills are. So that's actually what I'm not looking to see what their actual accomplishments are or what they actually desire to do. I want to see how they express themselves.
Fabulous. All right. Well, we unfortunately are running out of time, so we have to wrap up. But hopefully people now know all the things to do and not do when they're going through a hiring process. Can you tell us now about a great manager that you worked for and what made this person such a fabulous boss?
I was working at a technology, financial services technology company back in 2000. We were in year three, I think, and we got caught in the tech bubble. I was the head of HR there, and the president of the company, when we closed it, said, you should think about starting your own HR company. I've never seen anyone do HR the way you do it. Basically, he meant do it with no money. So he said, I should start my own company. And I said, that's a great idea, but absolutely not. I'm number two. I'm not number one. My role as chief HR officer has always been to sit on the shoulder of the CEO, whisper things in their ear, be their confessional. You know, I'm their confidant. And I love that role. I'm good at it. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go get a job, but thank you. And that was in February of 2001. By April of 2001, he reached out. He had started a new, was at a new company, needed some HR support, said he couldn't afford me. Why don't we do an independent contractor thing? And it met all the independent contractor rules, I will say. And so we did that for a few months. And from April through August of 2001, he just kept adding things to the engagement that he wanted me to do, because he knew that eventually my compliance gene would kick in, which it did in August. And I reached out to him and said, you know what? I have access to confidential information for your employees. You have me doing all sorts of stuff like running payroll. I need a corporate veil. I need to be protected. You need to be protected. We need a contract. We need confidentiality agreements, blah, 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 blah. And I incorporated. And he was my first client. And that was his plan all along.
Oh my goodness. So sneaky and so supportive. I love that.
Fantastic. He really is the Idomeneo origin story. And the thing about it was he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And that's actually the takeaway for us as leaders and managers. You know, it's really important to pay attention to the folks on your team, because you have a perspective they may not have of themselves. And when you see a golden nugget, make sure it blossoms. You have no idea how far they can go. It's, you know, over 20 years later, for Idomeneo, and we're still here and we're thriving, and, you know, he's doing great. We're doing great. And I never would have undertaken the most challenging and rewarding thing I've ever done in my life if it hadn't been for him kind of sneakily, you know, pushing me into it.
Amazing. All right. Actually, one more question. Is there anything that a candidate absolutely should or shouldn't ask us about our company and our job? Like, is there anything that if they don't come in with any questions, or if they don't come in with a certain set of questions, that we should be like, are they really taking this opportunity seriously? Do they really have like the right mentality for this work? Is there anything we should be really looking for in the questions they ask us? Or kind of conversely, are there questions that if they ask us this question, like, that's a flag, you should not, should be think twice before hiring them?
Exactly. Well, there are, yes, I have answers to both of those questions. So as far as what I'm looking for them to ask me, when candidates walk in for any job that we have at my organization, no matter how great they look on paper, no matter how great the phone screen has been, because we actually do phone screens, and actually people generally get interviewed before they make it to me. But if they walk in and they don't know anything about our organization, they're not the right candidate. Because with the internet and so much information so easily available, if you didn't take the time to, look at the YouTube channel, listen to the podcast, or read the website, or, you know, look at the blog, or do any of those things, then it shows that you don't have the level of interest and ingenuity that I'm looking for in our organization. So when someone walks in and they either don't have questions or they don't talk about the organization at all because they haven't done any background information on the organization, then that's a huge red flag for me. Also, if they walk in and I say, you know, we go through our thing and I say, you know, so what questions do you have for me? Because I literally ask candidates to interview me. If their first question is, well, how much does it pay and what are the benefits? That's probably not the right candidate. That's a flag for me because it's important and I will give you that. But if that is the most important thing to you around this job, then it means that anyone who comes along with better benefits or better salary at any time during your tenure here can easily woo you away. And I'm looking for someone who's committed to our vision and what we're trying to accomplish. And yes, we're going to pay you well and we're going to give you great benefits, but that's not the first thing, you know? So.
And where can people learn more about you and keep up with your work?
Well, you can find us on leadersjourneyexperience.com.
Fabulous. Well, thank you again, Vicky, for coming on. This is really a pleasure to talk with you, and I feel much more confident about entering into a hiring process in the future. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It was a great time. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Vicky is giving members of Podcast Plus a free guide, The Ultimate HR Workflow. This is a snappy, step-by-step HR guide to get you through all those tricky tasks, hiring, onboarding, dealing with terminations, and managing leave requests. To get this guest bonus and many more, and the private podcast feed with the extended episodes, become a member at themodernmanager.com/more. All the links are in the show notes and they can be delivered to your inbox when you subscribe to my newsletter. Find that at themodernmanager.com. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.